Hey everybody, as always, just dropping a little message before the show when something screwy or weird is going on with our audio. Welcome to episode 199, which means that yes, the next episode will be episode 200 and it will be a long show. But before we get to that, this week we had Calandra Usher on, and she is a person, well, we'll go into what she is and who she is. But the main problem I'm putting this here for is because when we recorded the show, she didn't really have a proper setup to record via Skype, and she recorded the show speaking into her iPad, into the microphone on her iPad. At the time, it sounded fine to myself and Lobo. Going back and listening to it in post-production, our audio drowned hers out really, really badly, and I didn't want to lose the episode, so I did the best that I possibly could to try to get everything back to normal again. I think it sounds okay. I'm going to toot my own horn here and say this is probably one of the best cleanup jobs that I think I've ever done, but then again, it took me all week to pull it off. So anyways, if you do hear some weird audio inconsistencies or it just sounds off the wall in somewhere in there, please, please, please forgive us. We did the best we could at the time. And again, while we were recording it, it didn't sound that bad. So moving on with the show.
As far back as educated men have recorded their history, veils have been lowered to disclose a vast new reality, rents in the fabric of man's awareness. And somewhere in the endless search of the curious mind lies the next vision, the next key to his infinite capacity.
Greetings, folks. Welcome back to One Step Closer to Episode 200. This week, we have a very unique individual that's coming on the show this week, and she suffers from synesthesia. Well, I wouldn't say she suffers from it. She seems to enjoy it pretty well, wouldn't you say?
She's probably one of the few synesthetes that we've been in contact with that actually seems to relish their...
Well, she's my first synesthete, so you know I've never met a person that has synesthesia before.
Never?
No, that's one of the reasons why I want to talk, because me and you have talked back and forth when we've read these articles and stuff, and I bring it up in the interview. You know, I bring it up that I'm like, it sounds like a cool place to visit, but I'm not sure if I would want to live there, because she essentially experiences a lot of stuff that people take hallucinogens and mushrooms and things like that to experience, but she experiences those feelings every day in her normal life. And it's just because of the way her brain is wired. But for me, and I stumble through this whole interview trying to piece it together, and I apologize if it comes across as strange, because this is one of those things that I simply just cannot comprehend as best as I try to, because it's a totally different world for me. The way that I see things, the way that I experience things, I hear things, they are what life is for me. And to try to envision things outside of that is very difficult. Like, there are points in this interview where she's describing me and you, and she's describing how things taste and stuff like that, and she's describing them as though they are a three-dimensional construct, yet she's not physically seeing them as a three-dimensional construct, yet she is interpreting them as a three-dimensional construct. And if that sounds crazy to you, that's the way it sounds to me, because as she's describing this stuff, when she gets to that part in the interview, my brain is just rippling, like, how do you... you know, she's talking about cooking something, and at the same time she's experiencing it and feeling it, my brain's going, how does that interpret into your brain? How can you do that? You know, it's just something that's so alien and so different and so strange to me that I can't quite put it together. Whereas with her, it's everyday normal existence. You know, like, there's a kid out there who's blind and he moves around. Actually, there's a lot of people that come to find out that do it. They're blind, but they get around by echolocation. They'll make a click.
Yeah, clicking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they are, and I can understand how that works, because their brain's bouncing back and they're getting a three-dimensional image on their head based on the sound waves that are bouncing back. They can't see color. They can't see text on a page, but they can see shapes and depth and things like that to a certain extent. Now, I can conceive that, because that's how they're conceiving their brain, because they can't see anything. All they can see is black, but they can still interpret the way it goes in their brain. Mm-hmm. Was that you sending me something or no?
Nope.
Okay. She must be sending me something again. but as she's describing this, it's like, okay, so she's actually seeing what she's doing, but at the same time, she has a mental image of her head of these other things that are going on as well, and it's so difficult for me to grasp. Now, other people might hear this and go, I can totally understand what she's talking about. And if you can, that's cool. I can't. Well, I can to an extent, but it's really hard for me to grasp. Basically, Callie, as she likes us to call her, Callie, which I have a hard time doing for some stupid reason. I don't know why. I couldn't get myself to do it. Even though we know
why.
Yeah. Because she's so much smarter than the other Callie we know.
Wow.
Yeah, they don't listen to the show anymore. I don't care. But she is an author. She is a book writer. She was referred to us through James McDonald, who was on the show last week. Mm-hmm. And while we were setting up for the show with James McDonald, he was like, I've got this friend, and she can do this, this, and this. Because when we were gearing up for that show, we were talking about senses, and you know, we had a really in-depth conversation with him, and I said, yeah, I'd like to meet this person. I'd like to meet this person completely. And we were going to originally have a doctor come on, and now in retrospect, I'm glad we didn't have a doctor come on with us. Unless it was Tyler. Tyler probably would have been interesting to have here. Mm-hmm. But the whole purpose, I want her to come on to explain what her life is like and how she perceives the world. And that's what she does. And then she kind of gives us a reading. Now, I got to clarify this here. When I say she gives us a reading, she is very intuitive in picking up what personalities and things like that and people are like. And I think what it is whereas, and I say in the interview as well, whereas me and you look at somebody, we say this person's a nice person, that person's not, blah, 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 blah. Her brain interprets those signals and things like that differently from people. And she sees people as not physically sees them. Again, this is where it's screwed up. She doesn't physically see them, but she mentally has a construct of what kind of colors a person is and what those colors within a person is. Mm-hmm. She'll describe it because she both reads me and then later on she reads Lobo. So I'm not going to go into big spoilers, but how does it feel to be a tree?
Good.
I didn't think it was a bad thing either. I interpreted it like a Native American would. You know, I guess that's the only way I can put it. Mm-hmm. But we're going to jump into the interview. This gets very deep into all kinds of different things of perception and how it affects people. Hopefully you guys will enjoy it. This is one of those shows that we're trying to give you a glimpse of what reality is like for a different person in somewhat of an alien world. And again, she doesn't suffer from it. She seems to enjoy it very much. Fantastic, fun, great person to talk to. I've talked to her for a while off the air, and you know, I've really been looking forward to try to put this together, and we hope you guys enjoy it. So we will see you at the other side.
Bye-bye.
All right, with us tonight, we have Calandra Usher. Am I saying that properly?
Calandra, yes.
Okay. I will probably still say it wrong because I'm an idiot. But
it's easier if you call me Callie.
Okay, we'll just call you Callie. That's easy enough for us to do. You are on the show because you were recommended to us as a person that has synesthesia. Now, we have touched on this topic before a few times here and there, and anytime that somebody has something interesting or different in their life that somebody else can't really relate to in the normal sense, we're curious about it. Now, synesthesia basically means that your senses are, for lack of a better term, crossed or miswired or oddly connected or something like that, to where you interpret, see, hear, taste, smell, whatever the senses may be, in a different order for the most part. Am I correct on that?
Yes, sir. That's a very good description of it. It actually stems from when you're a baby. You're born and your 5, 6, 8, however many senses you want to call it, are actually all fused together into one thing. And eventually your brain starts to learn to differentiate the different signals it's getting from visual to audio. People who have synesthesia generally are less evolved than other people because ours didn't completely uncross.
So are you like Cro-Magnon or something? Or?
What? I'm actually a 9-foot mountain troll. I just look really good.
Awesome.
So how does this work then? I was told that you actually can see auras in people, not in a I'm psychic, you know, reaching into the beyond kind of way, that like when you see people, you actually see color schemes around them and so forth. Is that correct?
It's more of a feeling it. It's hard to say because sometimes, you know, The sensations are perceived, and it's trying to find words to describe them to people who can't.
Yeah, we're dumb.
No, it's just
I know.
English is limited.
Yes.
Vocabulary is limited. That's why being a writer is kind of fun, because I get to play with words, and it's like putting things together to make new shapes. And that's kind of what my whole universe is about, is the shapes.
So you're a wordsmith.
I do see, feel colors in people when I talk to them, when I see them, and I get a definite sense of, it's almost, you know, people will say, oh, can you read me? And it's like, well, no, but I can tell you you're sky blue and you've got these lovely little striations of pink, and the pink means you've had this horrible thing happen to you at such and such a date. And they look at me with the wide eyes and they're like, oh, wow.
Is that... Is okay, like, say you meet, like, for me and people like Lobo, like, say somebody meets Lobo and they go, oh, this guy is an asshole, and it's, sorry.
No, you're not.
But you just, it's kind of like, okay, when you meet somebody, you get a sense of what their personality and stuff is. That's the way it works for me. You can meet somebody and go, okay, this guy's pretty cool, or this guy's a jerk, or this person's a sweetheart, or something like that. You get a definitive feeling about how that person is. So in your situation, it works with colors? Yes,
it works with colors and with textures and sort of like, okay, you have a mahogany red thing going for you, which is the strength of your very, okay. See, it's hard to put into words.
Are you doing this off of the picture from my Skype thing right now?
No, I can't see you, dear.
Okay.
All I can do, I can just hear you.
Oh, so you can actually get color interpretations from my voice.
Yes, sir. Well, from your mind? I don't know.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
I heard that, though. I heard that,
just,
man.
No, I'm just dreading what you think of me.
You're nice and quiet and safe. This one's the troublemaker.
Whoa.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. The mahogany red is a rich, warm tone that is actually very safe and very comforting. You're very, very good with children. People will automatically come up to you and be able to talk to you easily. You're approachable. And even though you don't want to be, you've got there's an edge that's a sort of a striation of dark blue, almost like a midnight blue, which is the intelligence and the way you see the world and you look at things and you... There's a logic and everything behind it. But there's also that emotional sense from the warmth underneath, which is what guides you and keeps you going and makes life very difficult for you sometimes.
Okay. Now, when you get this,
mm-hmm.
This is just something that you see it in your head, like in your mind's eye, for the most part. Is that how this works?
For the most part, I can feel it. I can feel the colors.
Okay, this is what's weird for me, because mm-hmm. the concept of feeling colors. I see colors. I don't feel colors. You know, I feel velvet and, like, you know, stuff like that, but I don't feel colors? Or is it like an emotional response kind of thing?
No, it's an actual physical sensation. The red-ish color in you is a soft sort of warm blobbyishness. And the dark blue is a very crystalline, thin, I wouldn't say cold, but it's very sharp.
Okay. Every time you say mahogany, I keep wanting to go back to the movie Anchorman, where he says,
oh,
I have a house full of fine mahogany. All right, Lobo, what do we got here for Lobes here?
Lobo,
or have you not talked to him enough to get enough out of him?
No, it's funny. I can't do it if I think about someone ahead of time.
Okay.
I have to be, if someone asks me and I say go, and there it is. I have to be talking to them, or I have to be, you know, sitting there looking at them.
Okay.
It's kind of a weird thing. I can't get it off a picture.
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we do the interview, then I'll ask you at the end more.
Okay.
Get that around. Okay, so that's one thing you've got. And then are there other things that are involved with this? Are you really good with numbers and things like that? Because I have read that people that have synesthesia.
No.
Okay.
No. I'm a fine artist. Not to disparage other fine artists, but I mean, I did take calculus, but I totally sucked at it. Me and the numbers, I think numbers are beautiful. And my favorite part of math was geometry, because it's picture math.
Mm-hmm.
It's math art. And that's all about the shapes. It was mm-hmm. about making the shapes in space and the X and the Y and that kind of thing. Like I said, shapes are everything that I'm, my senses are all messed up with shape. So like I taste a shape when I, when I eat something. Tastes.
So what does the Fibonacci scale taste like?
Oh my God. It's a buffet.
Wow, that would be cool. No, I don't taste math. When I eat food, I get a shape taste.
All right, this is something else I was curious about, because I've been putting a lot of thought into this for a long time before we talked to you. And when you're driving around, are your senses just overly bombarded? Like when you look at a stop, because everything you look at has a shape to it.
Oh, it does.
So in that case, like when you look at your computer screen, it's squares or rectangles. So you can't not look at something and see shape. So are you just bombarded with tastes? Or can you tune it out?
You can tune it out to a certain extent. I've gotten to the point where when I look at different shapes, I get more of a feeling of some of them. Like circles make me nice and calm. Squares aren't bad. They're nicely balanced. A rhombus just totally messes me up. It's all just wrong and imbalanced, and it makes me want to fix it. It hurts.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It's very, you know... stop signs are actually very nice, and the red is very bright. I like the feel of that. But it's more like I can't eat green food.
What?
I can't eat green food. It's so pretty, but I can't stand it. It's the wrong shape. The color is the wrong shape.
Wow.
So what shape is green?
It's green. It's just a wrong shape. It's the chlorophyll.
Well, if I were to make you green Jell-O to get you to eat green Jell-O, what shape would I have to make it for you to be able to eat it?
I couldn't. I mean, I could, but I'd puke on you.
The color has a shape in it itself. She's the color interpreting the shape. Right. Yeah, I understand.
Yep. The only thing I can eat that's green is generally like green gumdrops, something like that, because the shape of the sugar overwhelms the shape of the green.
Okay. So, do shapes have flavors then?
Yes, somewhat.
So, what is your favorite tasting shape? God, that feels so bizarre. How do you ask a person that question?
This is just fascinating.
Okay, so I still have the taste buds of a 10-year-old. So,
I mean, taking you out to dinner must be a pain in the ass.
Like hot dogs and chicken nuggets and French fries?
Oh, yeah, cake. Cake.
Oh, I love cake.
Cake, and if I could eat cake and steak, I'd be set. Because you've got sweet things, which are round, and you've got salty things, which are square. So, like, when you put salt on something, like, you have a good steak, nice medium-rare steak. You put a little bit of salt on it, it builds the flavor of the steak upward. It puts, like, a foundation underneath it so that it's stronger. Almost like building blocks.
Okay, so...
That sounds just so amazing.
I'm trying to put this together. So, like, you dump a bunch of wooden, different shaped blocks out onto the floor, and you create yourself a sumptuous dinner just out of shapes on the floor.
Well, kind of like that. It's like, you know, I'll be making tomato sauce, and because red is a perfectly lovely color, and I'll taste it, and it's too flat, or it's too weak, so I have to put in salt to make it taller. Because it doesn't taste right unless it's taller. Or it has to go a little bit more sideways because it needs more basil.
Okay, so...
That's awesome.
Okay, in regards...
This is fascinating.
Colors also have flavors to you then, correct, as well?
Somewhat, yes. It's a little bit more vague. I've been able to filter that slightly, but I can't get past the green.
I'm trying to imagine, like, making spaghetti sauce... And you taste, again, I don't know how you can not have sensory overload just by looking at everything.
I do. Occasionally, I'll just go shut myself in a closet and be in the dark where it's quiet. But it's I've gotten to the point where I can actually, well, and this may be something beyond the synesthesia. I am trained in Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an energy connection kind of thing that I'm very good at. I draw energy from the colors, from the sights. I can walk into a botanical garden and I'll sink to my knees as I suck in the colors because it tastes so good, or it feels so good, or it's amazing.
Okay, I can understand that. I think I can understand where you're coming from. So I got to ask you.
Yes, sir.
In growing up, what was your childhood like? How did you? Because how do you explain this to somebody else? I mean, you're growing up. You don't know that there's anything really wrong with you. I mean, what age?
No,
you
don't have any idea until you say something. And I didn't know for a long time because my mother did not like green vegetables. The only green vegetables we ever had were canned peas and canned beans, which, as you know, are not actually green anymore. They're sort of a gray.
No, they're grayish,
color.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were from the A&P store and had almost no flavor to them, thank God. And I hated them every minute of them, of their gray yuckiness, because they were close to being green. But it was, you know, on the nights when we had corn, that was much better, because yellow tasted better. And I didn't realize it had anything to do with the color until I got over to a friend's house who had frozen green peas. And I took a bite of them and spit them out all over the table. And I'm like, what are these? And they're like, they're peas. I'm like, no, they're not. They're not the right shape. And they looked at me like I was completely insane because, you know, peas are little round spheres of things. Mm-hmm. And I could see that. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, but that's not the right shape. I felt deceived.
Hmm.
Someone had lied to me about what peas were.
Damn it, I've been lied to.
I don't know. Who took the peas?
Yes, okay. Now, does this run in your family? Do you know of?
I know that something of it runs in the awareness of the energy definitely runs in my family because my dad used to be able to still himself. And I don't know that he was doing it consciously, but he could sit outside. He was a math teacher, a high school math teacher. And on weekends, he would cut wood and he'd drink stupid amounts of beer and he would sit in his lawn chair and he would read his book. And he would sit so still that squirrels would come up to him and sit on his foot.
Hmm.
And it's something I've learned to do. I can pull in my energy or I can make myself quiet in such a way that people will actually overlook me. They'll walk right past. They won't even see me.
So,
see, now my wife claims that if I don't want to be seen, I won't be seen.
See, you can do it too. Absolutely. No, it's totally, for most people, it's an unconscious kind of thing, but you can totally pull yourself in and it's almost like a, you know, an IEP field. IEP. No. An SEP field. Somebody else's problem. Yes.
There you go. See, that's, I just, wow. Now, as you were growing up, did it become more refined or has it stayed pretty much the same throughout your lifetime?
Let me interrupt that question with an addendum to that. What happened when you hit puberty to tie into what he's talking about?
Yeah, that's when the other thing happened.
I'm not talking about menstrual cycles here.
She already said she likes red, so.
I didn't figure. As I grew up, it, little things here and there, I only had a few friends that I was really close to. There was a difference in the way other kids would talk about things, so I learned to be quiet. And when I hit puberty, something else started to occur, which I didn't quite understand. I got the impression that this one young man liked me, which was ridiculous because I was flat-chested and unpopular and all these other things. But I was certain, absolutely certain, he liked me. And then one day he touched my arm, and I just about fell over because I could feel what he was feeling. And he absolutely liked me. And his heart, I could feel how fast his heart was going. I could feel the way, how anxious he was, how excited he was just touching me. And I didn't quite understand because puberty was only just slightly, you know, starting at that point and I wasn't interested. But it just astounded me the amount of energy and or feeling he was bottling up inside him. And you couldn't see anything on the outside other than a smile like in his eyes.
Hmm.
And I found out later on he asked me to a dance and it was just like, holy cow, I was right. And that only got louder and louder the older I got, while at the same time I learned to start controlling it in that I used to be, when I'd hear a loud sound, I would get this sort of static across my eyes, like a pixelation. It's not quite as bad as it used to be. The first time I went to a dance, actually with this young man, I was terrified because the music was so loud, I couldn't see a thing.
So your senses are just all screwed up.
My senses are completely screwed up. Yes.
Okay.
Part's gotten better.
Okay. So I keep going back to, like, green was the actual first trigger for you, though.
Yes.
The color green was, that's the grounding for where all this stuff started from.
Soylent Green is people, man.
So ever since you've been a child, you've always been able to feel these colors and stuff like that in people, or is that something that gradually is? Because as we grow, our senses and our brains aren't done cooking until we're in our 30s.
Right.
So your whole childhood, as you're growing up, you know, I tell my oldest daughter all the time, I'm like, you're not done cooking yet. When you hit 30, then you'll stop liking new music and, you know, all that kind of stuff, you know.
Is that what happened? Oh,
that's what
okay.
They say, you know, they say that after a certain point you have a harder time ingesting new stuff.
Okay.
You know, stuff like that. But
sure.
Makes sense. as you're evolving and going through puberty and going through life changes and your senses and stuff for all that are developing, were you telling your parents or anybody, hey, this is what's going on with me? Do the people think you were nuts or anything like that?
Not a great deal, no. I mean, my best friend, Matt, knew, but he was the only one. My father died when I was 9, and so I didn't get a chance ever to really talk to him about it after I hit puberty when things got much louder. He didn't eat green vegetables either, and I don't know if that was because of what I do or if it was just a preference kind of thing, or because my mom never served them for dinner, perhaps.
Is this stuff kind of stuff hereditary? I mean, can you?
Yes. Okay. Oh, yeah. Synesthesia is very often hereditary.
Okay.
Absolutely.
This is so hard for me. This is what we talked about. When we talked about this stuff before, we're like, it sounds like it's a nice place to visit, but I'm not sure if I'd want to stay there because...
Yeah, but it's something she's grown accustomed to.
Yeah,
we're from the outside looking in.
If you took this away from me, I would feel bereft. Because this is my universe.
Yeah.
How can you eat food without having shapes? That's so flat.
I can see what you're saying, but it's hard for me. Like, it's for you, it's all you've ever known. So it's
right.
You know, it's like a person who's colorblind or something like that. That's just the way the world is. And then you give them the special glasses, or their brains can actually see color. Oh my God, they flip out.
Yeah.
Or,
I saw that video. That was cool.
Yeah. Or the people that they've been blind their whole life, and then they give them the ability to see, and their brain can't react to it. It can't adjust.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
You learn to see. I mean, a lot of my mom used to tell me when I'd go into a store or something, don't touch. You can see better with your finger or with your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And she was completely wrong. I can see much better with my hands. The shapes.
You're reaching off a textural.
I'm going for texture. Texture, you know, and shape is my universe.
Have you ever learned how to read Braille?
No, I tried to, but I'm also dyslexic. and ambidextrous. So I don't have a right and a left, and it doesn't matter.
Dyslexic and ambidextrous. No, I do suffer from dyslexia myself.
Here's a question for you. Mm-hmm. Have you ever subjected yourself to a sensory deprivation chamber?
Oh, God, no.
Okay.
No, I mean, I went... I've been fascinated with the idea. I am somewhat claustrophobic, and I had to do an MRI once, twice, three times.
Lady.
Yes. Well, luckily I've got some memory issues too, so I don't remember as badly, but it's, yeah, no, I actually have a cyst in my brain, dead center. It's about the size of a walnut. They found it when I was in college.
Whoa.
They say it has nothing to do with anything of the universe whatsoever.
Right.
It's there, and it's the source of my secret powers, though. And I get to do an MRI, about every 5 or 6 years, just to make sure it hasn't grown or, you know, sprouted anything. Or
so how long have you known you've had it there, then?
About 20 years.
Probably ain't going to do anything by now. It's probably just
probably not. It's
probably
pretty safe.
Not. It's not exactly like they can get to it, though.
No, it's dead center, and that's what the fella told me at first. He's like, yeah, you've got this huge thing. It's in the middle of your brain. We couldn't take it out if we wanted.
Do you get headaches and stuff like that from it?
Well, that's why I went in originally. Why they started looking was because I was having some really bad headaches. But that had to do with the sensory overload stuff.
Ah, now we're coming full circle. That's what
there
I was wondering is, how does the sensory overload affect your brain, because you can only fire so many synapses at a time to be able to interpret everything. So, but that's what brings me back. You grew up this way, so I would think, again, I'm grasping at straws because I don't quite understand this and I'm trying so hard. You would think that your brain would simply evolve to be able to understand those kinds of inputs. In much the same way like a blind person develops a better sense of hearing and so forth.
Sure, but when you, let's say you're from a little Tibetan town in the mountains and suddenly you're put into New York City, your brain is going to go, ha, I'm terrified, I don't know what to do with all this, and it may just shut down.
So how do you live with this stuff now? How do you go about having a normal life and kids and a family and...
Don't be insulting, don't call me normal.
How do you be a freak?
Yes. It's a very nice thing to be a freak.
Have you not listened to our show?
I like freaks. We're in good company, man. Come on. Life is fine. I mean, it's... Yeah, there's things that make certain things more difficult. Like, I know very quickly if my husband is even slightly annoyed with me. He just has to walk in the door, and I can feel it by the way the air moves or the sound of his footfalls. There's a shape to it.
Yeah, I get and that from my wife all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a
cadence.
Call it an energy or something, you know. And I can tell, I can feel it as he walks in. I can see the spikes around him, and it's like, ooh, ow, sharp, that hurts.
So, do you work as a lie detector as well?
I'm actually pretty good at it. If someone believes their own lie, then I can't tell the difference because they. Their heartbeat and their everything, you know, that's, they may not know, but I'm a massage therapist. So when I work on people, the first thing I do when they lie down is I'll run my hand over their body about an inch above it, and I'll find where it's wrong, where the shape is wrong. And I'll go along and be like, okay, so you hurt right here, and I'll point to, you know, lower lumbar or something like that, and they go, ha, oh, how did you know? And it's like, your body told me the shape is wrong, there's something tangled here, it's not right.
I think what it is, and this is just me being odd, I think you're extremely good on picking up on visual cues and reading people. But the way that your senses work, it interprets it in a different way than, say, the average person does.
Micro expressions, yes. I have a feeling that that has a lot to do with it.
Whereas an average person goes, you know, I think this guy's lying or something like that. The way that you're wired or the way that you're set up, you just interpret it differently through your senses that way.
Except things we can't pick up.
I've likened it to... Like, I mean, some people think I can read their minds, and it's like, no, I can't hear the words that you're saying in your head. It's not, you know, telepathy. It's like reaching through a curtain and feeling shapes on the other side. And I've learned enough to know that if there's a square, a triangle, and then a circle, it means this. Or if it's, you know, three circles and a rhomboid or something, it can mean that.
I've often wondered that about when people say, oh yeah, I'm psychic, I can read minds or so forth. I've often debated that because thought is in many ways an instantaneous thing for the most part. It works, how the brain works on different levels. You have thoughts that are continuously running on different levels in the background. You might have a worry that's continuously looping over and over in your head as something that you're thinking about. And then you have something else going on somewhere else in your brain, like I need to go by the shop and pick up milk or something like that. And then on another part of your brain, you've got something else that's off in the distance. All of these things are running at the same time. And then when you actually do have some kind of a thought, it's an instantaneous thing. It's not something like it's I have a theory about how the brain works in different ways like that.
Sure. No, so. It sounds very I have freaked people out by saying almost exactly what they were thinking. But it's like what you said. There's a lot of micro expressions. It's the colors. It's the way they stand. It's
body language.
Yes, body language in so many little tiny things. You lean forward on your foot, you lean backwards, your arms are across your chest, they're down at your sides. You're smiling, but your eyes aren't looking at the thing that you're, you know, it's nothing conscious at this point. I've started to pick up on it because I was interested to say, oh, what am I really seeing? Mm-hmm. And part of that might be because I'm a fine artist. And one of the things we were taught was to draw what you actually see, not what you think you see.
Mm-hmm.
Which is hard to do because most of us look at a tree, and what does a child draw when they draw a tree? A little kid.
Oh, like just the usual
brown stick with a green cloud attached.
Yeah, the green circles going all around it for the leaves or whatever.
Is that an actual tree?
To them it is.
To them it is, correct.
Because it's the simplified version. They see a thing that goes up, and they see a lollipop of green above it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't actually think to draw, oh no, that's a trunk, those are a branch, these are individual leaves, until you force them to
actually.
We all
know what it is.
Right, but we all know what it is. Which is, it's a visual language that gets better once somebody actually teaches you how to look at something for real.
And then we'll draw some happy little clouds over here.
Don't talk smack about Bob Ross.
I love Bob Ross. He's the man.
Bob Ross is the Bob.
I used to watch him every time I'd get sick. It was the only thing on TV.
Have you heard the remix of the song that they did with him?
No.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
I might close out this show with it.
Oh, sweet.
His episodes are all on Netflix now.
Yeah, they just brought them up on Netflix. Yeah.
I showed my kids. They were not impressed.
His son was also a painter, too. It wasn't as accomplished as his father was, I don't think. But, yeah, Bob Ross was the shit. Bob Ross really was.
Yeah.
Okay, so going back to how this stuff works. So, okay, you see auras. You taste shapes.
Yep.
You don't hear colors, I'm assuming, no?
No.
Okay. Thank God. That would push
me. That'd be a bit much.
Well, I have read where there's people that, like, they listen to Led Zeppelin and they interpret Led Zeppelin as a color and blah, blah, blah as a color and things like that.
That would be cool.
I don't know. I don't know. But
what color is ABBA, you know?
Oh, God.
Man, what does Led Zeppelin look like?
There'd be a lot of sequins now.
So you taste shapes, you see auras, and based on personality profile types and so forth, for lack of a better word, that's the way I'm going to put it, I guess, because that's the only way I can really put it. You definitely don't like green because nothing green tastes like it should look. Am I right?
It hurts in my mouth.
Okay.
Which is so sad because
so you can't have mojitos.
No, but I don't. this is the weird physiology of my body. I can't get drunk.
What?
I
can't get drunk for completely different reasons.
What, your wife won't let you?
No, he's a recovering addict.
Yeah. I wouldn't have a wife anymore, I'll guarantee you that.
Yeah, he's been sober for quite some time, though, so we frequently joke about it.
Thank you.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's not looked at. It's looked at the fact that he's remained sober for so long and clean for so long is a symbol of strength. What did you say when you had your 20? Was it 20 year anniversary of being
21
so,
years?
Yeah, and I said that's great. Let me go buy you a drink.
Oh, ouch. But yeah, that's the instinct. It's like, oh, let's wait. No.
Yeah, but I can say that to him because he knows better.
Let's have some cookies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me buy you a steak. And
yeah.
That's
That's another thing. You were talking about steak earlier. Do you have a shape that, can you look at certain shapes and go, that reminds me of steak or something like that?
No, it only works the other direction.
Okay, so you have to, what do you mean by that?
I can't, in front of me, there's a wooden cube toy of one of my kids, which salt is a cube-like shape. It's square. Okay.
But hence why you said you had to stack the tomato sauce to make it taste better.
To make it tall enough.
To make it tall. Okay. All right.
Because it needed squares under it to bolster the flavor. Or the shape. Or the... To make it better. To make
You're
it right.
Weird.
The square. Yes. Yes,
not,
man.
Though.
Yes, I am.
God.
Oh, temperature has something to do with it, too.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
Does the structure change with temperature?
Yes. The hotter something is, the lower down it is. The colder it is, the higher it is.
So crystallization takes place with colder temperatures.
Yes.
And it becomes more amorphous as it heats up.
Yeah, kind of.
Oh, all right. That makes sense.
Yeah, that's a very nice way to put that.
I would love to see you in Hell's Kitchen.
You punch Gordon Ramsay in the throat.
I try to explain it by if you drink a Coke or, any kind of pop.
Pop. See, she said pop. Okay, go ahead.
It's called a soda stream. It's not called a pop stream.
Go ahead. Go ahead. You just solved. You're added to our little thing here. Go ahead. You're good.
No worries. I like my beverages really cold because it makes them much higher up. It makes them. I wouldn't say taller, but they're higher. And I like things that are sweet. So drinking a Coke is one of my favorite things, but it has to have ice, or it's not tall enough. If it starts to get warm, it's like a ball of I get this nice crystalline sphere that's high up, and the warmer the Coke gets, the lower and flabbier the sphere gets until it's a gooky thing that's down by my feet.
So your ideal Coke is a hobosphere, and Silly Putty is the low level.
Yes, that's a bad Coke.
All right.
I'd still drink it because it's Coke, but, you know.
Yeah, understandable.
And this is happening inside your mind. It's not happening in a three-dimensional plane of your vision. This is what's going on inside your brain, and you're seeing things inside your inner eye.
Yes. And, well, and on my tongue. As soon as it touches my tongue, I get this instant feeling of a shape. And the image of the shape.
That room in your head must be a really busy room. So how do you deal with... How do you deal with dinner? How hard must it be to sit down at a nice meal and have all of this context going on inside of your brain at the same time?
I eat really simple things. Like I said, I have the taste buds of a 10-year-old. I'm very happy to eat chicken fingers and fries or a hamburger. And I can deal with ketchup. I can't even touch mustard. If mustard is on me, oh, God, it's just wrong.
So Vindaloo would send you over the edge.
Probably.
It's a curry dish.
Yeah, no, I don't think I've had that one. My husband has a mouth of asbestos. The man can eat jalapenos, like, right off the plant.
Yeah, me too.
And I just kind of look at him and go, ow, ow, ow.
Well, that makes sense, though. It's green.
It is green.
But it's spicy, too.
And it's spicy, and it bites you. But I can't eat the, what is it, chipotles? Those are red.
Yes.
Because of the spiciness, that makes it too sharp. Those are spiky like a dandelion, only with razor sharp spikes.
Oh, like a stinging nettle then.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, screw that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not putting that in my mouth, man.
Are you on medication for any of this? Is there something you can take that brings us all down into a graspable sphere or something like that, or?
No, and generally you don't talk to psychiatrists about this. They tend to get nervous and then they try to do experiments on you, depending on if you're in a university or not.
Yeah, but it's not a psychological problem. It's a physiological problem. It's a neurological problem, correct? Or no?
Yes, technically it is a genetic thing. It's genetic. I'm assuming how you deal with it would be the emotional side of it.
Correct. Well, the two would be hand in hand. They would be tied together.
Right. I'm guessing there are people out there who take Xanax and other things to dull the sensations, but I want them. I wouldn't be me without them. I couldn't write what I have without them. And
That would take away from your entire experience.
Yeah. I couldn't paint without them.
That's the way I felt when I was on antidepressants.
Right. I was on antidepressants for a long time because I was diagnosed just a couple of years ago as being bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
But I hadn't known because there's a version of bipolarity where you don't have your first real mania until somewhere well into your adulthood. So this happened back in 2013. I woke up one morning after having my worst depression ever. I'm really surprised my husband didn't leave me. And I had this dream, and I'm like, wow, you know, that's kind of cool. I'm going to write that down. And 4.5 months later, I had a 4-book series, which is now published.
So...
Wow.
Yeah.
Are you on medication to deal with the depression, or should I not be asking that?
No, you can ask whatever you like. I just may not answer it.
Okay.
The reason why I'm asking is
because that medication affects your mood, and so you don't even have to say what it is. But yeah. I would imagine that would mess with your senses in some point. You know,
it did to a certain extent. I was on antidepressants since college with the headaches. That's what they gave me, thinking I was depressed, which I was, because that was the downside of the bipolarity. I didn't get the mania, which is the super duper high. You feel so good. You feel so amazing. You're jittering. Luckily, I had an iPad.
Completely and I was energized.
Totally. I slept maybe 2 hours a night. I hardly ate anything.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't need to. It was like being on crack. I'm assuming I've never had crack, but
it's not good.
I who knows? People seem to like it. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing, and my high of that mania lasted about 4 months, which is not usual.
A long time.
Yeah, it was.
That is a long time.
sitting there watching me just write and write and write, and I'd never written anything before. So this was all brand new. And I called up my psychiatrist, who had had me on antidepressants, and I said, hey, I got a question for you. I woke up, and I feel really, really good, and I've got a sex drive again, which I didn't when I was really depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm writing, and I was never a writer before, and I can't stop, and it seems like it's actually kind of good. Should I be worried? And my doctor calls me up, and he says, yes, please come in. So I come in, and the first, he sits me down, and he starts laughing at me. I like this man. He is a good, I like it when doctors laugh at me. They shouldn't take themselves too seriously.
Sounds like my doctor.
And, you know, you got to have a sense of humor. And he says, I know what's going on now. And I said, what? And he's like, you're having a mania. This is is this the first time this has happened when you felt this good? And I said, yeah, I think so. And he's like, yeah, this is called hypergraphia, which is that super compulsion to write. You see it in the movie like A Beautiful Mind,
mm-hmm.
or on Angel when Fred is writing equations all up and down the walls. In any of those movies where you see someone frantically writing on the walls, that's called hypergraphia. And that's what I did to write my books.
I can understand that.
It was a compulsion. I couldn't stop. I would get nervous when I couldn't be typing. It made it very difficult for those couple of months. But my doctor gave me he took me off the antidepressant, and he gave me a mood stabilizer, which is absolutely fantastic and settled things out. So I'm in this nice middle state now where I still can write, but I don't fall down in the really, really dark, scary depression anymore. Hmm. So, yeah, it's so much better. The right drugs. Oh, my God. It's wonderful. It really is. Yay for science and chemistry.
Woohoo! When they get the cocktail right, yes, it is.
It is. It's amazing.
So how has this affected your senses and stuff, though?
It made it easier to be in the room with my husband if he was cranky or something like that. It gave me a little bit more of a control over being able to filter, being able to push out the things I didn't want to feel.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is with the bipolarity, when I was really depressed, I was taking in everything and I couldn't control it at all.
That makes sense.
It was just, so much all the time drains all your energy.
You're dealing with everyone else's energy around you.
Right. Exactly. You need to be able to, I mean, even now, I like other people's energy. I love being in a crowd, like in a concert. I can go to a concert and I can suck in the energy of the whole bloody place.
Oh, not me. I'm terrified of crowds.
My husband's the same way. So it's like, okay, he'd be great as a hermit. It's like, and you married me. Okay,
Yeah, I generally, this show has made me make a conscious effort to be more involved with people. But, like, I like persons. I don't like people.
Yes.
People are mean, violent, angry creatures that, whereas a person, I can look at a person and say, you're cool, I like you, you're all right. Whereas people, I tend to just look at people as a whole and go, that is a savage, angry animal that I should not go near.
You need to go towards people in the right place. Like you go to a concert, everybody is thinking and feeling in the same direction. And it's some kind of, I wouldn't say adoration, but it's a desire to hear, an admiration.
Yeah.
And they're taking in the beauty of whatever this artist is creating, and they're fans of this artist. And
I've seen Rush 18 times.
Yes, exactly. So when, that first chord is played and the audience goes nuts because they know, they're going to play that song you've been wanting to hear.
Yeah, like being trapped in a group of people. Like, we go to Disney every so many years, and when it's time for Disney to close and everybody's making that mob to the exits and stuff like that, I just about lose my mind. I've got to get out of that crowd as fast as I can. I've gotten better with over the years because it was irritating my wife, but my wife has seen me lose it quite a few times where I just, she's like, it's cool, just calm down, we're going to get out of here, blah, blah, blah. And I try not to make a scene or whatever, but I'll just start walking and she'll grab me and be like, it's okay, just calm down.
That's a coming down energy. That's not as good of an energy. You're not getting the high rush of it. that's people dwindling and they're pulling in their own energy and they're all thinking about where they want to go. So it scatters.
Mm-hmm.
It's you're getting everybody's second thoughts. They're okay. I've got to find the keys. Shit. What do I do with the keys? Oh, damn. The kid's crying. Oh,
yes. I understand exactly what you're saying.
It's all those little chaoses.
Yeah. It's like being in a, it's like listening to a whole bunch of static television channels. Like
right.
When the TV channels used to go off back in the old days and it was nothing but static on the screen.
Yes.
That's a very exactly. similar feeling to it. It's a yes. chaotic. It's
very
repellent. Maybe I have your problems. I don't know.
Most people have a little bit. They've got, and they don't, they learned to filter it out a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like you used to be scared of the vacuum cleaner or, you know, the sound of the toilet flushing.
Mm-hmm.
There was a noise that scared you
mm-hmm.
because it was too big. It was going to get you.
I used to be that way around heavy machinery. Like, I couldn't walk yes. into boiler rooms and stuff like that. Those flip me out. I don't know why to this day. I still don't understand why to this day. That was one of my things.
I love it.
Well, now, now it's not a big deal. I can be around machinery, but for a long time, I would walk into a room with machinery, and I was just like, I can't be here.
Ooh.
But now it's not
never,
a big deal.
You would not survive at my shop.
Well, I've been in your shop.
With yeah. the CNC machine
yeah,
running?
I've been around
the
that
presses?
Stuff. Dude, I would...
Right, but you've learned to filter. As a child, you couldn't do that. It was probably the pressure, the heat.
You know, I don't know what it was, but as I got older, I used to listen to a lot of, like, quote-unquote industrial music and stuff like that, and I started, the noises of machines began to sound very, very cool to me.
Right.
You know, like, when I'm in a factory, I'm actually very calm now being in a factory, right? The sound of it and stuff is very cool to me. It's very different to me now. I find almost a sense of music in it.
Yes.
Whereas when I was a child, if I was around boilers or stuff like that, or big uh-huh. giant wheels or stuff like that, it would scare me. For some reason or another, it shifted in life. That's why maybe I go back to the puberty thing when your senses
right.
are developing. You know, you go through changes and things like that. So, I don't know. I mean, this all comes down to, like, how we perceive the world. And you are a living example. Your reality and your world is very different from ours. We share the same space, and we see the same things. But for you, it's a much richer and different environment. The thing is, though, is because you've grown up that way, it's normal for you. So, perhaps the way that we see and interpret things and stuff like that is very alien and strange for you to comprehend. No.
I sometimes feel sorry for some of the people I talk to, especially people who aren't sensitive at all to any kind of the energy kind of things, because those people really look at me like I'm nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wow, I feel like you're missing out on a whole nother plane
of
existence.
I mean, I could see where, like, a skeptical person would say that, because you're bordering, by saying this stuff, you're bordering on that whole realm of psychic powers and things like
right.
that. Whereas in your situation, I don't think it's so much psychic powers. It's just the way that you interpret stuff and the way that it fires in your brain is different. So it sounds like
right.
you're, you know, I'm psychic or whatever. And
it's like, nope, just a freak.
Yeah, it's just the way that you perceive things is differently. This reminds me of a story. There was a story that a person that I knew once told me that he knew this girl, and she would be able to tell when people are pregnant. She could walk up and say, you're pregnant, you're this far along and stuff. And what it turned out, what it was, is that she was incredibly sensitive to pheromones. And when a woman is pregnant, their pheromones in their body change throughout
yes.
the trimesters of their pregnancy. And she could detect that in their pheromones.
Oh, wow.
And it wasn't some crazy psychic power or whatever. It
no.
wasn't that it wasn't cool. It was very unique and very different, but it wasn't, you know, it was something that was explainable by science. She just had an extra ability to be able to pick up pheromones from people.
Right.
I've also heard of people that they can see into the ultraviolet spectrum, so they can see different
Ooh.
Shades of colors and things like that than we can.
Sure.
You know, they can look at different shades of yellow, where the shade of yellow will look the same to us, but because they can see into the ultraviolet spectrum, they have a more visible sight range because
neat.
Of the cones and rods in your eyes. I think we covered that, didn't we, Lobo, or not? I don't remember anymore.
I don't recall particularly that way. I know that we did touch on people's ability, certain people's ability, mostly females, to see colors that males can't see.
Huh.
Yes, that's another thing. This stuff seems to be more prominent in females than it is with men. And I've also noticed that men's synesthesia is different than female synesthesia. But that's because women are wired a lot different than men are.
We are, and we're more geared to pay attention in a quiet way. We're more generally taught to be more in tune with our emotions and to not suppress emotion and or what we feel and instinct and that kind of thing. Gentlemen aren't encouraged.
That's because we're brainwashed into believing we're not supposed to.
Right, exactly. And that's how, but that thing, that shapes it from the middle, from the mm-hmm. beginning. As a little boy, you know, your father says, yes, that's red. And you're like,
be a man.
It's pink. It's pink. I like the pink.
That's why sex is so different for men than it is for women. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's you come to perceive things.
God, your
partially.
Sex life must be insane. Now that I think about it, I'm sorry, I just had to blurt that out loud. It was just.
No shock there.
There's so many things that you.
Yeah.
There's so many things that you must interpret differently that I can't even begin to imagine what that would be like. Like dinner, I had to go back to eating dinner again, because that just sounds like to me it would be insane to, like, I wouldn't want to eat anything because you have such a variety of things going on in your brain that interpret what you taste and how
I do get that way. I get mad at the food. I'll be hungry and I'll go look at the food and I'll be like, none of this is the right shape. This is not the shape I'm looking for, or I just, no. And then I'll just decide not to eat, and I'll wait until the next time I get hungry.
How are tacos for you?
Softer.
Or you can't have lettuce because it's green.
Yeah, I can't have the lettuce. Sour cream can be a little sharp. I'm learning to do sour cream. I don't like the hard-shelled ones, but that's only because they fall apart when you bite into them, and uh-huh. that annoys me. I don't like cumin much. I know. It's all wrong. And I really should. If there's a light amount of cumin, I'm good with it. I like salsa.
So how does mostly. What shape is cumin for you then?
Cumin is, and I'm holding up my hand because you can't see that. Okay. Cumin is this tiny little shape, almost like grains of sand or powdered sugar, that go sideways off into the distance from both sides of me.
Wow.
Yeah.
That right there, how That's you awesome. Can see that blows my mind.
I hold up
it
my
sounds like the synesthete that we were talking about a few shows ago that actually saw their calendar as days before them, in the middle of them, and behind them in a circular fashion.
Right. I have heard about that one. Well, wow. my daughter has, she's just about to hit 15, and she is starting to come into similar things like that. We discovered she was bipolar even before we discovered I was. And she's got a whole list of what color numbers are and what color days are. So like Friday is always green and spiky. And I think Tuesdays are orange and squishy.
Yeah, they pretty much are.
She's got an advantage, though, at the fact that she's got you as a mother where she can just come up and talk about this stuff, and you're like, oh, okay, you know.
Right, yes. My mom, I do remember speaking to her about it once when I was in about 7th or 8th grade, and we were at dinner, and she said something. She had just gotten a new job, and it was one of the first ones back from after my father had died, and she had a boss who was younger than her. And she has no filter. She says whatever comes into her mind, and it's sharp and it's mean, usually.
I love her.
No, people like that are irritating.
No. This is the same woman who told me that sons are much better and she never wanted children.
Wow.
Yeah, wonderful woman. And I told her, or her boss snapped at her because she said something about his age. He was younger. And I said, well, why didn't you realize, you know, why didn't you see it in him that he was sensitive about that? How could you not see that? And she looked at me like I was nuts. And I said, I mean, you could feel it. You can feel it when people are anxious about things. And then she asked me, you know, she's like, what do you mean? And I explained it. And she was quiet for quite a while, and then she asked me if I had prayed and asked for God to take this away from me.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And I was just like, oh.
Right up there with we can pray the gay away.
Yes.
Oh, my.
Oh, goodness.
Okay.
And I admit I was very involved with the church. After my father died, I really had nothing else to do. My mom, you know, totally sucked, and she withdrew from the world almost completely. My brother and I were on our own from the time I was in fourth grade on. And so I'd go to church. I loved music. I loved the choir music. And like I was talking about the concert before, I became an acolyte so that I could be there for all three services and feel the music and feel the direction of all those minds thinking mostly in the same direction with the same idea. It's a being led as a group there's a ceremony to it, to a church service of any variety or any religious
ceremony.
Let me
ask you a question. This just popped in my head.
Sure.
Because I've never encountered anybody. When I'm around a group sometimes, God, I don't believe I'm going to say all this on the air.
Yeah, you do.
Hey, if I can be a freak, you can too. It's a safe place.
No, well, it's one of those things where, you see, the way you're saying this stuff, it doesn't make me feel as strange now, because I have a lot of strange sensations like this before. Not like what you're describing, but strange sensations in different ways. My wife can't stand it for the most part, so we seldom talk about it. And I've never tried to put an inscription of yes, because I'm psychic, because I don't necessarily know if I fully believe in psychic powers. I do believe that there are other senses that we don't fully understand. I do believe that people can sync up on various different ways, but I don't necessarily think that that is a quote-unquote psychic thing. It's just something that human beings or nature or whatever does. It's just something we don't quite understand just yet. I know I probably sound like I'm talking in circles.
No, not at all. That's what I try to explain to each other, to people all the time.
There are many times in my life, very many times, where I'll be around groups of people or something like that. And for brief periods of instances, I get a sensation of oneness with everybody where I can almost feel it. And
yes,
it's very chilling. And it's to the point where I get intense goosebumps all over my entire body, and it feels just—it's like a wave of sensation that runs through me. And some people, was it orgasm? No, it's not like
no,
that. But it's a very.
Do you enjoy it? Have you learned?
No,
to enjoy
I don't.
It?
I don't enjoy it at all. It's very uncomfortable, and I don't know. It's just such an alien sensation from me. But it's just—it's one of those things where it's just like I can feel the people around me.
Yes.
And it's very quick. It doesn't sting. It doesn't linger for very long. And it's, it does make me stutter my breath sometimes. And my wife has looked at me and been like, are you okay? And then like, she'll see the goosebumps in my arm. And you know, now it's kind of like, oh, that happened again, didn't it? Yeah. Fortunately, it doesn't happen very much anymore. It seems to be going away the older that I get. But I've also had other sensations where I've had, I did have one sensation where I was outside and I briefly, for a very brief period of time, felt like I was out of place with what was going on in time around me.
Ooh.
Which was extremely uncomfortable, and I don't ever want
yes.
to go through that again or wish to have anybody else to go through that.
Yeah, no, I've done that. That's a unique one.
If that was weird. I don't know if I've ever talked about it before, but I was unloading groceries out of our minivan at the time, and then it seemed like it lasted for an inordinate amount of time, but I don't think it lasted that long at all, but it just felt very much like I was able to step back, and I was watching the world around me happen before it actually happened, like there's going to be a car that turns that corner, now a bird's going to fly over there, that door's going to open up, my daughter's going to walk up into me and say this, and these things would happen as I was experiencing that they were going to happen. And it was very, very disconcerting because it felt like I was on a carnival ride that I had no control over. And then it just kind of sinked right back into place again. But it was very, very, very uncomfortable. And I don't think it lasted very long at all because my daughter was like, Dad, you know, you're going to carry these in or whatever. And I'm just looking at her. And I had to have had this blank look on my face because I'm looking around just looking at stuff as it happens. And I've never really been able to quite completely describe it very well. And then
could you see you?
No, I couldn't see me. I wasn't outside of myself, but it felt like I was outside of time as it was passing. I guess I would say I was slightly ahead of it.
Okay.
To where I would be able to say, all right, you know, this, it was just a sense of knowing this is what's going to happen next. This is what's going to happen next. And this is going to happen next. And for a while, it really screwed with me because, you know, if you go by the religious aspect of things that we have free will, and
sure.
at that moment, I did not feel like I had free will. It very much felt like everything is set to go on a certain path. And as though it's amazing how fast the brain processes stuff when it happens. Because
sure.
I don't think this lasted very long at all. But what was going through my brain was, I have no control over everything that's going to happen. It's just happening. And I'm seeing it happen before it happens. And then as it happens. And I have no free will over all this stuff. You know, as it's happening.
Of course you have free will.
Not at that moment I didn't. It was like.
You did. Actually, you did. Because even if. No. This may sound silly, but we have free will. We can make any, decision we want, and we're going to. Just because the universe knows what's going to happen, what we're going to choose, doesn't mean you don't have the free will to choose what you're going to do. It just already knows what you're going to choose.
Then that doesn't make any sense to me.
Okay. Never mind. Please continue.
No, that was, it was just a very uncomfortable feeling at the time. And then it was, as soon as it was over with and done, it passed. It freaked me out for quite a while. But it was, the other thing is, I couldn't explain it to anybody. Like, who the,
right,
who am I going to tell that to? It's like, listen, mm-hmm, I wasn't smoking weed. I didn't drop mushrooms. I didn't take acid. This is what happened. And just as soon as it was there, it was over with. But for that brief few seconds, it was just like, I can't reach over and close this door if I want to, because I'm not supposed to close the door. Okay, now I can close the door because I'm supposed to close the door now. But I couldn't have done it a couple of minutes ago because I wasn't supposed to do it a couple of minutes ago.
Okay. Part I know. Of that might just have been shock and being dumbfounded because you had never experienced that before.
And I hope I don't do it again.
Well, maybe next time you'll be able to close it or open it when you want to.
I don't know.
I know, don't risk it.
I don't want it back. I know that I did not want it back. And as far as being in groups of people or being around certain people, when that wave comes over me, it's very, it's also very uncomfortable. It's like, just let this pass, please. And then it's, sure, and it's over and done with. So that's my weirdnesses, but maybe I'm experiencing something along the lines of what you experienced. But if you say that everybody has this to a certain extent, then I don't know. I guess I don't know. So, having said all this, because we're getting, coming up on time here, before I let you go and give you a chance to, you know, promote all your stuff that you do, because you are an author, you do write books, give me Lobo. What is his color scheme and all that fun stuff?
Lobo is a nice dark green. He's got a, it's almost like a forest green. It's very, it's tall.
That means you wouldn't eat him, which is good.
Do what?
I said that means you wouldn't be eating him, so that's good.
No, I would not eat Lobo. He's too big. He's.
I'm sure he hears that a lot from women too.
Oh, I'm sure Christ he loves it.
No, I mean he's. It's a very tall color, almost like a wall of green that's tall and thin, but it, like a towering oak or something like that. It's very steadfast. It's very sheltering and protecting. But it also sees, it's kind of, I think it would be hard, it would be easy to knock over, would be the problem. That it's got this, it's built up a tall strength, but the foundation isn't as strong as it should be. So I'm betting, or thinking, that you've been knocked down, that you've been hurt really badly, and that it's, I'm using my hands again and you guys can't see me. It's like a tree being felled and you have to grow yourself back up again. But there's also a lovely sort of peach color, which is the sense of humor. It's the being the tree and watching out for things going by, but it's that wicked glint in your eye because you can see more than other people are seeing and you're laughing quietly about it. You don't. You're like a tree hiding in a forest, and you're watching the squirrels run around madly, and that's the human race of the squirrels running around madly, and you're just sitting there, you know, laughing about it.
Ho, ho, ho. Green wow. Giant.
Yeah, kind of.
And you don't taste right, so she could never eat you.
I could never eat you, man. But I could climb. I like trees. I'm very good with the tree climbing.
That was very deep.
Did I come close? I mean, does that feel like
probably closer than I'd like to admit.
I love that.
I have fallen very hard. Very, well, very hard.
But you've gotten back up again. You're still tall. Think of yourself more like a willow tree. That way you bend without getting knocked down.
I like it.
You should. You're a cool guy.
I'm humbled by the statement.
No, not at all. I like you guys. You guys have great energy.
We try. We try. All right. So tell us about what you do, where people can find you, if you want to talk about your books and stuff, because you are an author. You do have a series of four books. Is it four or five books?
It's four right now.
And I believe each book has its own symbol and color scheme to it or something like that?
Yes. It's, well, you have to have a tagline for a series so that your elevator sentence to catch people's attention.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I worked on this. It is the story of how the daughter of Lucifer saves the four horsemen of the apocalypse from damnation.
What's the name of the book, please?
It's a series of four of them.
The series is called The Gospels of Calea, C-A-L apostrophe E-I-A.
And then each book is the Book of Dean, the Book of Fabian, the Book of Pete, and the Book of Wren. Because it's like four Gospels and, you know, like Mark, Luke, and John and those guys.
And she is currently working on the Book of Stimpy, but we don't know when that's actually going to come out.
Ah, that one's a lot harder, man. It's just...
Wren
took it all. He finished the story. Sorry.
I need to own these.
They are good. Hey, the book of Dean is the Kindle version is 99 cents, and on Amazon it always is.
Where can people go and buy, like, if you want to get a hardcover version of your book or whatever? I'm assuming they're all available on Amazon. Or
yes, sir.
And they would just search your name to find them and so forth.
Yes, they'd be under Calandra Usher. If you just type in the Book of Dean, generally Dean Kuntz comes up. It's very obnoxious. But yes, if you type in Calandra Usher, you'll find all four of them.
Hold on a second. Where did you come up with the symbol for the Book of Wren?
That's Wren. Oh, that was God. The dream. These four books are the dream that I had when I wrote the Mania. Each of those symbols represents one of the guys, one of the four horsemen.
And who is Wren?
Wren is war.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because I used to draw this symbol.
It fits, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of creepy.
Yeah. No, it's cool, man. It's cool.
That creepy to me is awesome, so.
Yeah. Oh, good. Creepy in a good way.
Did you now create you these symbols yourself, or?
Yes. No, I drew them. My husband is my beloved code monkey, and he rendered them to make them look prettier. But the symbol, the title, all of the black background for the books, that was all my idea. It was how it was supposed to be.
So did the synesthesia play a part in what the symbols look like or whatever? Or they just?
Of course it did.
Yeah, I can feel the guys. They're very real to me. If I do get sad or depressed, I'll go back and I'll read some of one of the books because I need to talk to Dean, or I need to go and hang out with Fabian, or they're just... A lot of the story in the four books is a lot of my life experience. So it does explain synesthesia. It explains a lot of, I killed an ambulance once because I sucked down all the energy from it. I didn't do it on purpose. It was a total mistake, but it's in the book.
So when you read people, can you pull symbols off of them in that way?
Not generally. I used to draw what I would call the mind pattern of what people look like. And now it's more of, if I sit down and actually do it, I can do it. So like with Lobo, I would get that tall green shield of green, almost, you know, tree-ish glass kind of thing going up with the peach striations. Aren't actually striations, they're more of a pink ribbon that kind of spirals around him almost as a shield. It protects, but it also makes him, you know, that much shinier and beautiful. It's, yeah, if I think about it, I mean, I could draw it out, but it doesn't come across quite the same way. It's more of a three-dimensional thing than the symbols. These are the sigils that are on their swords. There's a whole language to the seraphim.
Interesting. Well, we're going to let you go. Thank you very much for coming on here and speaking with us and telling us about how your reality works. I still...
Or doesn't.
It does for you.
It's working wonderfully, actually.
Yeah, it works for you. I can't understand it because it's such a foreign and different thing for me, but you've grown up with it your whole life. It's just the way that you interpret things. But that's kind of why I wanted to have you on here, to get a taste of what that world is like. You know, how does it work? I've always questioned, what is a person with synesthesia? How does the world work for them? And I've, like I said before we did this interview, I've been thinking a lot about it. Like when I'll be driving, I'll see a stop sign and I'll be like, if she tastes colors or tastes shapes, you know, there's shapes everywhere. How does that, how can you drive and not be overloaded with stuff? How can you do so many of your tasks in life with not being overloaded in some sort of different way? You know, like driving through sure. Times Square and seeing all the lights and shapes going off must be simply overload for you.
Me. That's the closest to drunk I've ever been.
Yeah, it's just that, you know, how does that work? How can it,
well,
you know?
How do you play basketball while listening to music?
Well, I'm a rather Rubenesque large individual, so I don't play basketball very well. But
okay, croquet.
Oh yeah, I'm a definitely world champ croquet player for sure. I don't know. I see what your point is. You do one while one other one's going off in the background,
right?
Yeah. So
I always there's always a song playing in the back of my head, whether I know it or not.
And if I pay attention, oh, you know, there's They Might Be Giants singing Is a Little Birdhouse in My Soul in the back of my head.
See, I always have Calliope music.
Oh.
Always.
Well, that's neat.
It's frightening at times.
Did you have a lot of carousel rides as a child?
Yeah, my printer just started going off. If anybody hears that, that's my printer going off for some random reason.
Okay.
That's bizarre.
Do you need to go on a carousel? Should we get you some carousel rides?
No, I went on the oldest carousel in North America, and it was an out-of-body experience.
Where? Which one?
What the hell's the name of it? It is in the Cape? No, Martha's Vineyard.
Oh, okay.
And there is actually a game that they play while you're there to try and grab as many brass rings as you can.
Yes, that's what it means, to grab the brass ring. It's a carousel game.
It was an out-of-body experience.
Nice. Right, I love carousels. They feel so good. Carousels feel fantastic.
Yes.
Yes.
I will agree with that statement wholeheartedly.
We got steak, we got cake, and we got carousels.
Sounds like a party.
All right, Callie, thank you very much for talking to us. It's been a real pleasure hearing this. It's been a lot of fun.
It's a pleasure talking to you gentlemen, too. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
No problem. Want to get in contact with the show or listen to back episodes? It's easy. Go to www.projectarchivist.com. On the right side of the page, you'll find links to our archives, as well as links on how to get onto our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter. If you want to leave a voicemail for us, it's 734-681-0459. Yes, we do listen to all of them. Or if you want to talk to Lobo directly, you can call 203-212-9975. Yes, that will in fact put you in touch with his cell phone. If he's available, he will take your call and talk to you. If you're just looking to send us an email, you can do that at projectarchivist@gmail.com. Don't forget to look for us on iTunes under the podcast section, or you can stream us right to your phone with the Stitcher Android app for free.
Hey, this is Nock from the Geek Yogurt Podcast. Tune in every week as we discuss movies, TV, comics, and video games. We are on Podbean, iTunes, Satchel, or on your favorite podcast app. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter at Yogurt Podcast and weigh in on our weekly topics.
Are you afraid of what goes bump in the night?
Have you or your friends ever pondered a conspiracy?
Do you want to know more about the unknown?
If so, then put on your tinfoil hat, sit down, and pick up your computer, tablet, or phone. Go to iTunes or YouTube and search for Secret Transmission Podcast and listen to us try to explain the unexplainable.
Follow us on Twitter for updates on shows.
At Secret Trans Pod. That's SecretTransPod.
Or you can email us suggestions
at secrettransmission@hotmail.com. That's SecretTransMission@hotmail.com.
Hey, congratulations. You're already listening to one of the best podcasts on the internet, Project Archivist, with Rojan and Lobo, a couple of guys I've known for a long time. They put on a great show, and so do I. It's called Sword and Scale, and it deals with true crime, horrible things that have happened in this world that we live in, with real people that live amongst us. In fact, what we say on the show is that the worst monsters are real. And I think if you listen to some of our stories, you too will agree. So head on over to swordandscale.com after the episode and give us a listen. And now, back to the show.
All right, so what'd you think of Callie?
I love
Top
her.
Of your head. What did you get out of that?
I thought it was amazing. It gave me a greater understanding of how her mind works, what her perceptions are, how she sees the world around her. It's fascinating.
Again, I don't know if I'd want to live there, though. It sounds.
I would love to visit. I couldn't live there. If you had wiped me and dropped me there, I would be able to adapt. If you drop me there as I am now, I would have initially a hard time adjusting.
I think I would have that. There. Look on my face that Hillary Clinton had at the Democratic National Convention when the balloons were dropping from the ceiling.
Jesus Christ.
Have you seen those memes?
How many times?
That would probably be my look for the most part. I don't know if I would just like sit there and flip out not being able to deal with it. I mean, you've done drugs.
I have.
So how much of what
she's... Been a very long time.
But you've done a lot of different stuff. You know, it's no secret. We've talked about it many times.
I'll tell you what, I've seen more strange things off of drugs than I have ever on drugs.
But what she's describing, does that sound like at any time, like taking drugs? Is that a similar experience?
No. Again, it's like stuff I've seen off of drugs. I've had some really weird experiences. I've been clean longer than I ever used. And I've had some really strange out there experiences completely clean.
Yeah, I don't believe I rattled all that crap off about me either. I'm not going to edit it out, though.
You've talked about it before.
Yeah, well, I've talked about the whole time thing, but I've never talked about me being in crowds and stuff. Because the reason why is it sounds very woo-woo for me.
Not really.
It does for me. It sounds very woo-woo because I've never wanted to be like, I'm psychic and I can pick up these imprints on people and stuff. I've never, ever thought of it.
I've been in crowds before and I can feel everybody around me and hear them. And I'm like, okay, I need to leave now.
That's the way it is for me.
Yeah, you're not alone. So I'm sure there's people out there that are going to agree or, you know, have the same feelings to a, you know, a lesser or a greater extent. Most people just don't want to talk about it because they think they're alone. That's why I understand her living as a synesthete, because she understands how it is. And to open herself up as she has in the past and tonight, it allows those that don't understand to get a better glimpse. And at this point of her life, she seems as though she just... zero fucks given.
I mean, exactly.
She knows how she feels. She's tried to explain it, and then it's up to us to interpret what was said.
Well, she's a very, very open person, because I've had conversations with her. I've had many conversations with her off the air through Facebook and things like that behind the scenes and trying to put this together and figure out where the conversation was going to go from her. And what I really wanted to do was to give her an opportunity to be like, just tell what this is like to the best of your ability and stuff like that. I'm like, there's certain things in your life that we just don't care about. We care about this right here. But she comes across very much as a person like, yeah, go ahead and ask me whatever you want. I'll talk about it. Like, hey, I brought up the sex thing for a second, and she was ready to go on that. And I almost bit at that worm, because it's like, this is going to sound strange, but when you're a person that experiences all of those different senses and all of those different levels, you know, what is something like that like? We already talked about what food and eating and stuff is like with that, but what is that world like? But at what point does it go into an area of creepy personalness? So I was like, you know what? I don't think I quite want to go into that. But there was definitely a curiosity there. You know, I didn't want to be like, so how intense are your orgasms? It's gonna be crazy. But
that
I didn't
turn really quick. Really,
I know, but she
really
probably
quick
would have answered it completely straight up, and she, you know, with much vigor, I'm assuming. But again, you know, because this sounds so creepy, weird, but sex is a very, you know, it's as much emotional as in a physical thing.
Yep.
You know, it's a very much as much as a sensing thing is emotional, and all those things that all tie together. And I was like, do I go there? Nah, I'm not going to go there, because it could get really strange. And I didn't want to be like going into creepy, weird areas in those regards. But there's probably people out there right now saying, why didn't you say that? Because I didn't want it to be creepy, but, you know, I don't know.
Perhaps at another time.
Yeah, perhaps at another time.
I think she was very eloquent.
Very well-spoken, very eloquent. And I'm going to make every damn effort I can. By the time that this thing gets out there, the show where she's going to be up here by me will only be a couple of days away. So depending on my work schedule, come hell or high water, I'm going to try to get out there and see her to the best of my ability.
Cool.
So, you know. Well, I'm a little cooked from doing that, experiencing sensory overload, trying to answer the right questions or ask the right questions to go wherever. So I don't really have too much more to say. I'm sure there was a lot, but I can't remember right now because I'm just absolutely baked. So we're still getting a lot of response from the Jim McDonald episode about the artificial intelligence. A lot of people have been retweeting that show and putting it out there. Thank you very much for that. The last found audio UFO show, I think the second one was better than the first one, in my opinion. Listening to the two ladies talk about how they were chased down by a UFO. I'm going to take a break on the Found Audio shows for a little while. I do have one coming up. Me and Chuck and you, if you want to jump into it, I've got one that we're working on for Gray Barker. where Gray Barker gives a conference, and then myself and Chuck have been reading Gray Barker books and stuff. So that will probably be the next found audio piece that we throw up there. But I'm going to give them a break for a little bit. I don't know, just because I feel like they're like I'm not putting as much work into them. I am, because I got to go find the stuff, and I know everybody's going to tell me, but you are blah 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 blah. I know, but I like putting shows out, real shows where we talk and do things and talk about creepy, weird synesthesia orgasms.
Okay. It just turned really creepy.
Which is what we're trying to avoid.
Well, you know.
All right. As usual, I am babbling, and we're just going to call it good. We're going to call this a show and hope everybody enjoyed it. I will have links to her books and where to find her in our show notes for this at the projectarchivist.com website. And I think that's it. This is Rogan. Peace out from Detroit.
This is Lobo from Connecticut.
Whee!
I don't know.
You remember that song? You probably wouldn't remember that. The little song where the guy's singing is called Wee, and he's singing about a little...
What do you mean I wouldn't remember that? Me and my brother-in-law lost our minds on that.
Go Neds and Strife.
What do you mean? Wee!
Go Neds and Strife. Go Neds and Strife.
Dude,
go Neds and Strife.
We went nuts on that. We played that over and over again. I think I put it on a 4.25 drive.
The first time I heard
drive,
that.
And I kept giving it to him.
Me and my buddy found that song. Me and my buddy Dave, the guy who helps me out with the website. The first time we ever heard it, I think we listened to it like 6 or 7 times. It was one of the situations where I was laughing so hard that I couldn't breathe and tears were streaming down my face because it was just such a stupid song. Just go out and do a YouTube search on Gonads and Strife. How old is that now? 20 years old or something now? It was back in the infancy of Flash animation.
Yeah, dude, it's old.
It's old. All right, folks, take care. Peace.
Peace.
I'm the sun and the air. The shyness that is criminally vulgar. I am son and heir of nothing really in particular. You shut your mouth, how can you say? I go about things the wrong way. I am human and I need to be loved, just like everybody else. That is criminally vulgar. I am the son and heir of nothing in particular. You shut your mouth, how can you say? I go about things the wrong way. I am human and I need to be loved, just like everybody else. We'll be right back.
Actually have the song playing.
Strife.
Gonads and strife.
Gonads and strife. Gonads and strife.
Gonads and strife.
Gonads
and strife. Gonads and strife.
Oh my god.
Gonads and strife. Gonads and the lightning. In the rain.
All right, we're done. We're done now.
Yes, we're done.
I broke. I can't go any further.
Beep, beep.
Peace. Bye.
Peace.